Have you ever wondered why exactly it is that things usually sound better at home than they do on stage, in auditions, or even in lessons? It's easy to chalk it up to nerves or assume that you just have to practice more or get more performance experience. And sure, those things certainly are part of the puzzle, but a lot of times that's not really the true root cause. If you've been confused by the inconsistency of your performances, I put together a free 4-minute quiz called the Mental Skills Audit, which will help you pinpoint your mental strengths and weaknesses and figure out what exactly to adjust and tweak in your preparation for more consistently optimal performances. You can take the Mental Skills Audit online at bulletproofmusician.com/MSA. That's MSA for Mental Skills Audit. And again, it's 100% free, and it'll take just 4 minutes to get your results emailed to you as a PDF. This is Noah Kageyama, and you're listening to the Bulletproof Musician Podcast. Every Sunday morning, we'll take a look at a new research-based tip or technique to help you practice more effectively or perform better under pressure. And on the first Sunday of every month, I'll have a guest from the music, sport, or research world who will share their insights on how we can all be a little more awesome in the practice room and on stage. I've always encouraged my kids to do things that were uncomfortable and slightly outside their comfort zone. So when they started getting old enough to sense hypocrisy in the world around them, I figured it was time to model some of this behavior myself. Long story short, I picked up a new sport, and the experience was a lot tougher than I expected. Suddenly, I had a lot more empathy for what my kids were going through, because I had completely forgotten what it felt like to be a beginner, with the constant confuzzlement and overwhelm that comes with learning something totally foreign. Unsurprisingly, many of my old learning habits from music kicked in too, like my tendency to want to do things perfectly from the very beginning. After all, practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect, right? But over time, I noticed that the other newbies who went through class with less attention to detail seemed to progress and improve and do just fine. And my high standards and so-called perfect practice weren't helping me learn any better or faster than anyone else. If anything, it seemed to be slowing me down. So how important is it really to maintain high standards when you're learning something new? Is it best to maintain a zero tolerance policy for mistakes from day one? Or is it okay to aim for close enough in the early stages? A team of researchers at the University of Hong Kong recruited 216 third, fourth, and fifth graders to participate in a 5-week practice program. Everyone started out with a test of throwing accuracy and form, where they were asked to throw 10 beanbags as accurately as possible at a small target 5 meters away. Specifically, the target was a life-size picture of their PE teacher holding a softball inside a baseball mitt. And to be clear, the target wasn't the PE teacher, but the softball inside the catcher's mitt. Then, over the course of the next few weeks, the students practiced throwing beanbags at a square target taped on the wall for 15 minutes once per week. But not everyone practiced the same way. One group of students, the error-reduced group, threw beanbags towards a large, easy 2.4 square meter target area in week 1, a medium-sized 1.1 square meter target in week 2, and a small 0.45 square meter target in week 3. And in case your meters to feet conversion math is a little rusty, 2.4 meters is almost 8 feet. So even though their eventual goal was to hit a softball-sized target, they started out by throwing at a giant 8-foot by 8-foot square in the wall, and then a 3.5 square foot target, and then a 1.5 square foot target. In other words, the standards of success were lowered at first so that achieving success in the early going would be easy and only become more challenging with time. Another group of students, the error-strewn group, went in the reverse order. They started off throwing at the smallest target in week 1, the medium target in week 2, and the large easy target in week 3. For this group, achieving success in the beginning was much tougher because they were asked to perform to a higher standard from day 1. So would this difference in practice approach affect their learning and performance at all? Well, a week later, everyone was tested on their throwing accuracy and their throwing form once again, in exactly the same way they were tested at the very beginning of the study. Their improvement from week 1 to week 5 was measured in two ways. To measure accuracy, the researchers calculated the distance from the center of the target, which was the softball in their catcher's mitt, to where the student's beanbag actually hit the wall. And to evaluate throwing form and technique, one of the researchers, a physiotherapist, and three trained evaluators viewed videotape of each student's throws to establish a movement form score from 0 to 8, based on the movement of their arm and hand, their hips and shoulders, their feet, and their trunk. So, which type of practice led to the most improvement from week 1 to week 5? In terms of accuracy, the error-reduced group, this is where they progressed from easier to more challenging standards over the course of training, they made more significant strides in accuracy over the course of the study. And what about the error-strewn group that went from more challenging standards to more relaxed standards over time? Well, they didn't really improve that much at all, and their throwing form didn't improve as much as the error-reduced group either. So why is this? There are several reasons why starting off with more forgiving standards and progressively raising the bar may have resulted in greater learning and performance. One possibility is that by making the task easier to succeed at in the early stages of learning, it freed the students up to just throw and avoid the tendency to get overly analytical or concerned about perfect execution, which can lock us up and constrain the explorative process of figuring out the best way to perform a skill. It's possible that confidence may have played a role too. After all, there's nothing that squashes confidence like being totally inept at something on day one. So having more early successes may have kept students engaged in learning and trying to improve on each week's performance, which seems reasonable given that the students who had the worst pretest throwing scores seemed to benefit most from the error-reduced training. At some point, it's essential to delve into the details and develop a deep understanding of the underlying mechanics of a skill, so in the long run, things probably balance out a bit. But as I reflect back on most learning experiences I've had, it does seem that my teachers have generally tried to get me to master the basic gist of a new skill first, even if the results weren't perfect. And only over time, as I became more skilled, did we address the finer details and nuances of the skill. I recall being somewhat resistant to this approach at times, thinking it was being too permissive of sloppiness or imperfection, but studies like this one suggest that perhaps they were right. That instead of trying to achieve an expert level of perfection right from the very beginning, maybe it's more effective to lower the bar, get the basics down, and then refine to a progressively higher standard once the key elements of a skill are locked in.